Well, a Russian author once wrote, "Smells are surer than sights or sounds to make your heartstrings crack." And he's right. Smells have a way of tapping into our memories and into our emotions. For example, I can still vividly remember the smell of Grandma's cottage, right? Or I remember the sort of seaweed smell that came off a Scottish beach where my kids learned to play and wade in the water. So ask yourself, what smells do you remember and why? Today's passage is about Jesus at a dinner, and it's not long before he died, right? So think of the smells from Jesus' ministry up until that point. Think of the smell of miracle wine provided at a wedding, the wonderfully complex aroma that's full of tannins, excuse me. Or think of the smell of cattle and sheep that are leaving the temple when Jesus drove their money-changing owners away. Think of the smell of the hot sun evaporating the dampness off of stone walls of a well underneath a Samaritan woman. Or think of the smell of sweat and body odor that had seeped into a disabled man's palate over the course of 38 years. Think of the warm, yeasty smell of bread, the earthy smell of mud that had been spread on the eyes of a man who was born blind, the smell of spring grass in a pasture that's used to nurture hungry flocks of sheep. Or think of the smell of Lazarus' decomposing body. And to that list of smells of Jesus' ministry, today we add one more: the scent of perfume that Mary puts on his feet, filling that entire room. Well, before we go further, I think it'll be helpful to briefly set our passage in its context within the book of John. Because here in chapter 12, it's a turning point. So big overview. John in chapter 1, we get this prologue about how Jesus is God made human, right? He's the light of the world. He has come to battle the darkness. And then this first 11 chapters of John are called the Book of Signs. They detail some of Jesus's miracles, but perhaps more importantly, how people responded to him. And now, here in chapter 12, John turns to Jesus' suffering and to his death. The struggle between light and darkness has reached a fever pitch. The light is shining brightly in the world, calling men and women to come and join him. And at the same time, the forces of darkness are working to snuff him out. Everyone must choose sides. And it's right there, in the middle of that tension, that Mary does something remarkable. Her reckless devotion to Jesus sets her apart from the other disciples. And this morning, I want us to reflect on how we can be more like Mary. Because this is a sermon all about smells. I briefly toyed with the idea of bringing in various things and lofting aromas into the room, and I decided that doesn't work for a myriad of reasons. But run with me here. This is a sermon about smells. Today, I want to talk about the smell of death. I want to talk about the smell of extravagant devotion, and I want to talk about the smell of being cheap. So first, take in the smell of death. There were some powerful Jewish rulers who wanted Jesus dead, and they wanted Lazarus dead too. You see, after raising Lazarus from the grave, there was a serious threat to Jesus' life. The Sanhedrin, who were like the power structure, said to the public, "Turn Jesus in." So really, Jesus and Lazarus were both wanted men. It's as if the officials were saying, "Let's get rid of this criminal Jesus and let's get rid of the evidence named Lazarus." However, as the Passover festival approaches, Jesus comes back near danger. He comes back to Jerusalem. He comes back to Lazarus and his sisters, Mary and Martha. Now, some of his followers have an important meal in Jesus' honor to remember Lazarus being resurrected. And of course, that's going to draw some attention. So all this was kind of risky, right? This could get Jesus caught. This could get him killed. And you know what? Mary, she kind of gets it. She seems like she could read the writing on the wall. And I think that's why she did what she did with the perfume. Because, of course, you would only anoint the feet of a dead person. And at that dinner, death was present. The smell of Lazarus' death lingered in the air, so to speak, right? Jesus had raised him from the dead not all that long ago, and that was the talk of the town. But there was another death that loomed large. Now, we as the readers of the gospel know that Jesus is going to die. And certainly his disciples should have known too. I mean, he told them as much. So the smell of death, figuratively speaking, was coming from both Lazarus and Jesus. Yeah, Lazarus has been resurrected. Yeah, we know that Jesus will emerge victoriously from death. But it's really important to see the difference between those two. You see, Lazarus eventually had another funeral. Jesus didn't. But hold on, we're getting ahead of ourselves with all this resurrection talk. We're not there yet. We're still back at this dinner. And at this dinner, Jesus is given a kingly treatment of sorts. In telling this episode, other gospels mentioned that she anointed his head. And that's something you do to kings. You anoint their head. So Mary takes this perfume and anoints Jesus as king. Shortly after this, that's a role he'll take up in his triumphant entry into Jerusalem, right? That's next week at Palm Sunday. In the Gospels, his death is seen as the death of a king. And remember, during his crucifixion, there's a sign that says, King of the Jews. And even if that's intended sarcastically, we understand the irony that it's true. But Jesus is a particular type of king we see in his anointment here. Not just his head, but his feet are anointed too. He's a different sort of king. He's a king who washes the feet of others. He's a king who's the servant of all. He's the king whose victory is the cross. He's the king whose kingdom is not of this world. Now Mary, she appears at Jesus' feet several times in the Gospels. She sits there to learn as a disciple. And here in our passage for today, she anoints his feet in devoted service. Now, apparently listening at his feet all that time had done her some good, and she learned a few things. She'd figured out what was going on. And when she's criticized for it, Jesus defends her as the one who understands what's going on even better than the apostles. You see, what Mary did here is an important gift to Jesus. She anoints him lavishly, and the scent of what she did for him probably stayed on him for the whole week as he went up to die. Even as he's being beaten and crucified, Mary's gift was with him and was even on him. He could still smell it. It was truly the last beautiful thing that he smelled before he went to the cross. So here in this story, the scent of perfume points us forward. While the men surrounding Jesus ask questions, they can't understand his decision to go to death, Mary gets it and she says nothing. She understands that her Lord must die, so she starts embalming him while she still can. With all that she has, she prepares her Savior for the grave. You and I stand 2,000 years removed from Mary on the other side of Jesus' death. But still, she's the type of disciple that we need to be. It's easy sometimes for us to forget that there's no resurrection without dying first. We need to be reminded sometimes that being a disciple of Jesus means following him into death. Now, that might be a literal death for the martyrs, but that's death in all other sorts of ways, too. We need to die to ourselves. We need to die to our selfishness. We need to die to our pride. We need to die to our sin. Because only the path through death will lead us to new and everlasting life. Well, second, I want you to take in the smell of extravagant devotion. Mary's dramatic gesture is simply astounding. It's astonishing. She takes this expensive perfume and rubs it all over Jesus' feet. And he finds it a pleasing expression of devotion. So let's unpack that. What did she do exactly? Well, the text tells us that she used nard, which I've never heard of that until this passage, right? But nard is a rare, sweet-smelling spice from northern India. And it says in the text that Mary's gift was pure nard. And that means it wasn't mixed with other additives to kind of boost its weight for sale, right? I mean, this is the good stuff. This is uncut. This is the very, very best. Now, we don't know how she got something like this. Maybe she comes from money. Maybe this was a family heirloom. But we do know that it was expensive. At least 70,000 RMB in today's context. And that would have been just simply unaffordable for the average family. And so Mary anoints Jesus, and she does so generously, right? It's a bit strange that she uses her hair to dry his feet, right? In that culture, women didn't let their hair down in public. That was, in that context, something considered private and intimate. And also, letting her hair down is unique and interesting because it's a humble act, right? Even the servants whose job it is to wash people's feet could use a towel. They didn't have to use their own hair or their own bodies to do it. But Mary used that which symbolized her glory as a woman in that culture. So in a sense, she casts her glory at Jesus' feet in doing this. It's an intimate and passionate act. She's acting out of selfless discipleship. She's acting with extravagant abandon. So much so that she doesn't even take a little dab of the perfume and rub it in. No, she dumps the whole jar. I can see her just shaking out the last little drop, right? And the whole house is filled with the fragrance of this perfume. That expensive perfume, that powerful perfume, permeated every nook and cranny of that house. It filled and overwhelmed the senses of everyone there. And that wonderful smell was there in contrast to the smell of pending death that actually only Jesus and Mary perceived at that moment. See, the thing is, the smell of that perfume didn't counteract the death. It didn't erase that smell in the room. See, that often happens. Smells don't replace so much as they contrast. The smell of her gift of love was there, mixed in that room with the smell of death. And so there was God in the flesh, in a room full of the simultaneous smells of life and death. And I think that can be the hard part of this text. Because we want Mary's act of love and devotion to sort of cover up the ugliness and stench of Jesus' death. We want that pleasant aroma of resurrection to make the sickening smell of death go away for us. But that's not how it works. You see, Jesus' resurrection proves that life will have the last word over death. Yes. But the pain and the power of death still stink. So yeah, of course, everything changes with the resurrection. But today, 1 week before Palm Sunday, I think we need to remember that the smell of abundant love and life doesn't mean the smell of death isn't going to be there in our nostrils as well. We Christians must always remember that the smell of death is pungent, because the grace-filled truth of the Christian message is that God incarnate died to take away the sting of death, of our own death. You see, that's something interesting about smell. You can't choose one smell over another, right? When it comes to vision, I can look past something to try to see something else and kind of ignore something in my peripheral or what I focus in on, right? Or when it comes to hearing, I can focus in on one sound and try to tune out another sound, right? But that's not how it works with smell. You never say, oh, I'm going to stop smelling that now. Like, you don't control it. In fact, the sense of smell just takes control of us. It's just there. It's present to us. You have to deal with it. No matter what memory it brings back to you, no matter what feeling it brings up in you, no matter what it does to you, you just have to deal with it. That's the power of the sense of smell. And I think that's the power of this story, especially in our last 2 weeks of Lent here. This story ties Lent and Easter together so tightly that you can't separate them. Well, Mary's act was an act of extravagant discipleship. But there's a contrast in this passage. Judas. And that leads us to our final smell today. So thirdly, take in the smell of being cheap, of being spiritually cheap. You see, the deep, sincere devotion of Mary is contrasted with the disingenuousness of Judas. Right? What's interesting is that Judas doesn't object to her using her hair, which is culturally quite scandalous, right? But that's not his problem, right? No, he objects to the cost of the perfume. And you know, he gives a disturbingly reasonable objection. You always feel a little weird when you're like, Judas is talking sense right now, right? But he is, right? He says, why wasn't this sold and the money given to the poor? And I think sometimes we're kind of like, yeah, why wasn't it? You know, it's not surprising that Judas raises this objection. This gift is astounding and he's the treasurer. But we understand that his objection is ironic because Judas, remember the guy who's going to betray Jesus, he would just steal from the money bag whenever he felt like it. But you know what? Let's set that aside. Because even if Judas's motives were dishonest, it's not easy to dismiss his point, right? This whole perfume thing just kind of seems over the top. Certainly, she could have just used a little less of it, sold what was left, and done a lot of good, helped the needy instead of dumping it all out at once. But what's interesting is that Jesus defends her act, right? He says, "You always have the poor with you, but you do not always have me." Now, this statement is about the importance of that moment in that room for all of history. It's about the uniqueness of Jesus' life and his upcoming death. So what we can't do is take these words here, you always have the poor with you, and sort of use them as a theological shrug of shoulders in the face of poverty. I mean, it is not at all the case that Jesus is saying here, poverty, am I right? What can you do? As he throws his hands in the air. No, actually, these words, you will always have the poor with you, are not his focus, but they're kind of a passing indictment. I think it's as if Jesus is saying, listen, I know you. I know the human heart. And I know how sinful economic systems work. They produce poverty. And therefore, I know that the poor will always be with you. Because you could change things if you really wanted to, but you won't. That's the snide little criticism, snide not in a disrespectful way, but that is the subtle criticism he puts in there. Now, at this point, I want to say that a Christian concern for the poor should really not be set in opposition to service to Jesus, right? Sometimes this conversation shapes up as should we serve Jesus or should we serve the poor? I think that's a little confused. What makes Christian concern for the poor to be Christian is that it's done in obedience to Jesus. And not all concern for the poor is like that, right? Perhaps some people are worried about the poor to score some social points or for virtue signaling. Maybe they're operating out of a place of class guilt, or maybe they're operating in self-righteousness. But you know what? Even if serving the poor is done with some degree of altruism, it's really only done Christianly if it's done as an offering to Jesus. And so we don't ask, should I serve Jesus or should I serve the poor? I should serve Jesus by serving the poor. But back to our story. When Judas objects, Jesus defends Mary. He says something like this, "Leave her alone. You know, she bought this so that she might keep it for the day of my burial." In other words, Jesus is telling Judas, stop annoying her. She bought this perfume a while ago to use it for something important, and she's figured out that something important is right now. Now that I'm here and my time has come, she's using it for something really special to prepare me for burial while I'm yet still with you. And you know what? She's the only one in this room who really gets it. That's what Jesus is saying. Remember that Judas thinks that Jesus' life is worth a mere 30 pieces of silver. But Mary spends as much as she could, probably more than 70,000 RMB, to anoint Jesus before he dies. She gave all that was precious to her. And that's why she's remembered wherever the gospel is preached. That's why we're talking about her today. Now, I could be wrong, but I suspect that none of you have a 70,000 RMB bottle of perfume sitting in your bathroom. Anyone? Don't raise your hand. We'll know who to rob. But listen, you might not have an expensive bottle of perfume, but there is something that's very precious to you. It's probably something different for everyone, but I think you know what it is for you. Think about it. Search your heart. What is it that's very precious to you? Maybe it's your desire to succeed. Maybe it's your child, your mother, your sister, your spouse. Maybe it's your retirement savings. Maybe it's your reputation. I mean, it could be anything, maybe something I haven't mentioned. So get into that mind and ask yourself, what would it look like for you to offer that thing to Jesus? What if your child says that she wants to leave the standard of living you created for her to go do Christian service in a distant, difficult, dangerous, discouraging place? That hits a little home, close to home for me, right? What if you spent your retirement savings in unglamorous service to the poor, living very modestly so that you could give generously? What if you were sacrificed your retirement of comfort and leisure to Jesus in that way? Each of us, in our own way, have something tremendously valuable that we could break open and pour out as an act of love to the Lord. And so the question from this text to us today becomes this: how extravagant is our love for Jesus? The answer to that question is how much you're willing to pour out for him. But I can tell you this: no gift is wasted that shows gratitude to Jesus dying for us. This morning I have put before us Mary's example of discipleship and devotion. In the last week before he died, Jesus washed his disciples' feet as an act of love, service, and humility. But catch this: Mary is the only one who does it before Jesus even asks. So, brothers and sisters, strive to make your life smell like Mary's life. Because the life of a disciple is to give off a certain scent, the scent of extravagant love for the Lord. Amen.